You're listening to KVNF, Mountain Grown Community Radio. Today's program, we'll be talking with the Delta County Commissioners, and our host for the program is Mr. Felix Belmont. Felix?
Thank you, Jeff. Welcome to the May edition of our monthly Delta County Commissioners Report. I'm Felix Belmont. Today, our guest is Mr. Mark Rober, District 3 Commissioner. Thank you for taking the time to come in to speak to us today, Mark.
Pleasure to be here, Felix.
Mark, we're coming to the end of the high school academic year, and the papers are full of reports and pictures depicting the awards of many scholarships by all kinds of organizations, scholarships to high school seniors throughout the county. Does the county, specifically the Board of County Commissioners, participate in this in any way? Like, for instance, an award to an outstanding student in civics, or something of that nature?
No, we never have, Felix. That's something to maybe think about. But we've always, the way the current board would probably look at it is it'd probably be out of our own pocket if we were to do something, since we are... It is taxpayer money that we deal with, but that's an interesting – I hadn't really thought about it before.
Well, I had never thought about it until I'm reading the paper, you know, and half the local papers, which is great. All the kids get their pictures and stuff.
Right.
And there's so many organizations. I suppose if you did pick out two or three students and something, it would get political because there'd be other people saying, why didn't you do mine and so on.
I'm sure that's true.
But it just occurred to me that there's so many other organizations, and I just thought maybe the commission might do something. But it might be something we
might have to discuss a little bit. But we do contribute to each of the high school's grad night.
Yeah.
The county does make a contribution to each high school for that.
Sure.
But as far as scholarships, we haven't ever really thought about that, but maybe we'll have to discuss that one.
Well, so many people and so many different kinds of organizations are getting involved now that I just brought it up because I happen to be involved with the Paonia Rotary thing with scholar, very much involved. And
yeah.
We just this week have been doing interviews with applicants and so on, and so it was sort of on my mind, you know.
Yeah.
A week ago, the Gunnison Basin Roundtable hosted a meeting in Hotchkiss to discuss the future of water in the North Fork Valley and to discuss the Colorado Water Plan, a statewide plan ordered by Governor John Hickenlooper. Did anything of significance come out of this meeting? In general, you as a long-time rancher, what do you think is the most important or immediate issue regarding water in Delta County and perhaps even in your third district?
Well, I think as far as water is concerned, an aging infrastructure and I sit on the round table.
Oh, you are on it. Okay, you know about it intimately.
Yeah, I was appointed to the round table to represent Delta County. So I'm involved in...
Forgive me for not knowing that.
I should have known that. I don't really publicize it that much.
Right, go ahead.
But, you know, the water plan, of course, water is scarce throughout the West, and the Colorado River is over-appropriated, and there's going to be a continuing struggle for a limited resource. So the roundtable is kind of charged with trying to figure out how to deal with that. And it's an ongoing process. I don't think there's any shortcut answers to any of it. It's a matter of quality and quantity. And of being able to use a resource that's vital to, you know, just life itself is water. So it's it's an interesting process that we're going through with trying to meet the governor's Colorado plan. There's a lot of different ideas of why that came about, and you know, politics probably is involved.
You better believe. But, I'm sure.
But it's you know, and use of water, just like use of land, is coming into play. And so you're talking water efficiencies, aging infrastructures, and just a general lack of water. That's we continue to kind of be in a drought cycle, you know, some years better than others. So it's kind of trying to do some long-term planning is you know, what they're trying to come up with. Of course, they've got all kinds of demographics, whether you agree or disagree with them about future growth and what kind of limitations there are to that. And, you know, let's face it, water is going to be a limitation. And but I think as far as the roundtable is concerned right now, it's there's some turf protection going on. Everybody's afraid the East Slope's coming after more. And, you know, it's not necessarily, I think we've gotten past the point of saying not one more drop, but I think we're kind of going down the route, well, if you're going to take it, it's going to cost you a lot. So that's kind of the direction it's kind of headed.
Well, it's fascinating to me because, as you know, I came from New York City, and I came out here, and I was so naive that I thought the way you got water is you walked over to the spigot and you turned it on. And then I'm up on Stucker Mesa, and somehow there weren't any spigots around. And I mean this literally. I started from scratch, and I had to learn fast, but I couldn't believe how naive I was about water and so on, having always grown up in a city somewhere where it was established. And it is just a different world. And I would suspect that half of the country that lives in big towns or cities just has no concept of the situation.
Well, I'm sure that's true. And it's amazing how many people live here really don't have the concept of it.
I suppose that's true, too. And also how complicated this water law is and so on. And I remember my first experience when I had a little ditch and some various things built on my property, and this my next door neighbor came storming over one Sunday morning screaming at me that I was stealing some of his water. And he was not kidding, he was really up, and I was shocked. In fact, for a few minutes I was actually scared because he was so mad. Well, it turned out he didn't know that I owned some shares. He thought I didn't own any shares, and after he found out I did, then he calmed down a little bit. But it was this is like 20 years ago, you know, more than that. But it was an experience for me, something new. Anyway, Mark, it's well, let me first say that if you tune in a few minutes after the hour, this is the May Delta County Commissioner's Report, and our guest today is Mark Rober, our 3rd District Commissioner. It's been reported that this week residents from the North Fork Valley are meeting with representatives from the Bureau of Land Management and Colorado Senators Michael Bennett and Mark Udall, plus Representative Scott Tipton, regarding a community-based proposal for protecting the valley's public lands from oil and gas development. Can you tell us anything more about this? And specifically, are the county commissioners also involved in this discussion?
We have not been real involved. The group did come present the North Fork Alternative Plan, having to do with the resource management plan for the BLM. They did present that to the commissioners last fall. We studied it a little bit, but we have not really taken a position one way or the other on the plan itself. We try and keep apprised of it, and continue to try and work with everybody. But We haven't taken a formal position on it. Yeah. I think there's some parts of it that personally I thought were good. I think parts of it maybe were maybe too restrictive. I would like to see more of a coming together and meeting of the minds and trying to work a little more all-inclusive solution.
What does the plan say? I mean, I know it's very detailed and all that, but how would you summarize it? What, I mean, I'm sure we all know drilling isn't going to go away and it's inevitable and so on.
Well, my short synopsis is it just says no. And
well, my short reaction to that is it's not going to work if it just says no.
And that's kind of my reaction too, Felix. I think we still need to, you know, we've got to. There's some places that we don't need to drill, but there's other places that I think, if it is there, and that's a question in the Northport, that I think we could, with a lot of mitigation and other things involved. So, you know, I'm not ready to just jump on board and say, yeah, we support the North Fork alternative, partly because of that. Because when you really look at what was presented to us and start overlaying maps, there's less than 10% of the ground even available for exploration.
I'm not sure I thought 10% of what?
Of the public land that would even be available to drill.
Oh, 10% of the public land would even be available for drilling.
Right. Right. And I think that may be a little bit too extreme, you know, from a personal standpoint.
Yeah.
Like I say, I think there's definitely places that we can look at that shouldn't be drilled on. And then there's places that I really, if there was something there, I think could be and not really hurt anybody involved.
Yeah.
And we've always been, you know, this current board has been supportive of trying to use energy resources they've been a pretty big economic component to our economy here in this county. And we feel that we probably need to continue that just for economic survival. So I guess we're somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
We aren't, I'm not a proponent of drill here, drill everywhere, but I do think we have to be wise about some of the decisions we make, and some of this goes into future generations also.
Sure. What we really need is more technique in determining if there is some oil or gas in a given place.
Yeah.
But, I mean, a lot of the holes they drill are exploratory, I would imagine. They don't know.
Basically everything that has been drilled here right now is exploratory.
Yeah, they don't know for sure until they actually punch a hole in the ground.
Taking a big risk even drilling. And because of the geography and geologic formations, it's not a boom cycle that it's going to hit here right away, because these are expensive wells they're drilling.
I'm sure they are. Yeah. Well, we just have to see. I mean, it's one of the things we have to live with, and it's an ongoing thing.
Right.
But I think we all have to be sort of reasonable about it. I mean, we're not, the country's not independent of imported oil, and we need the oil or we need the gas. And
I'm looking ahead at future generations also. Right now, it's not economically viable to even drill here in all reality. Nobody's really very interested in coming in here because they are expensive wells. The price of gas is relatively cheap. They aren't going to get a return on it. So I don't, there's a part of me that says there's a lot of arguing over nothing right now.
And it isn't just the wells. You've got to have pipelines to take it out and all the rest of the stuff that goes with it.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. There's no supporting infrastructure here right now.
Talking with Mark Rober, our third district commissioner here. Mark, back in March, we talked briefly with Commissioner Hovde on the program about local farmers planning to grow industrial hemp in the county. I believe they have to register to do so, and there are a number of regulations to which they have to adhere. It would seem that this might be a favorable economic development for agriculture in the county. Have there been any recent developments in this situation, and where do the commissioners stand on this subject?
Well, hemp, it was not part of the ordinance that was passed a year ago that banned marijuana. Hemp was exempt from that. They do have to register with the Colorado Department of Agriculture to grow hemp. And I have no idea. I think the sign-up period was within this last month. I have no idea how many did or anything like that. And as far as markets and those type of things, it's I really don't know. I can't really answer very much about it other than, you know, it is there if somebody wanted to try it. And I've heard of a few people that thought that they were going to try and grow some hemp. One of them had to do with, as a cover crop, he really felt like that was the best alternative to anything he had seen as far as trying to make better soil health. So we'll probably see some here in the county, but I really don't have any statistics for you as far as how many.
Now, I've read that there is some problem getting the seed, actually.
I'm sure that's true. I'm sure that's true.
And you still have very restrictive federal.
It's still federal. It's still against federal laws to grow hemp. So.
And I suppose theoretically, even if you order seed, it's got to pass across a state line or something. It's sort of illegal even.
Yeah, I don't really know the implications of some of that, Felix. You know, I know that all I know is the Department of Ag did grow up their regulations as to what they required, but I haven't really looked into what they are.
How is the sale, the retail sale of marijuana, which is now legal except in specific places where it's banned, how's it going in the county? I mean, has there been any overall problems or has it been pretty smooth?
Well, it's banned in this county. There hasn't been
completely.
Any. Yeah.
Completely?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize it was.
Yeah. The ordinance that was passed in 2013 banned the grow or sale of marijuana. So currently.
So how's the bootleg business going?
Well,
I
hear it's going pretty well.
It's got to be out there.
I hear it's going pretty well.
What I find is very intriguing, and it's almost funny, as there's been reports in the press of where it is legal, but the problem the sellers are having in banking their money. They have a real problem because, like somebody gives a check, the check has to clear through a Federal Reserve Bank, and it's illegal federally, and there's a lot of them that I gather from what I've read, legally or from a practical point of view, don't have any place to put the money that they get for it.
Well, that was one of the issues that was brought forward. And, you know, we've had some conversations with some local people that want us to reevaluate the ordinance that was passed. And you know, that is one of the concerns out there is the federal banking rules, which have somewhat been relaxed, but there's still some questions on it. And then just the idea of a lot of it dealing in cash and the threat of you know, you've got places that have a lot of cash, they become a target for thieves.
Yeah.
And so the increased security and law enforcement and whatnot that is requiring. Those are all questions that I think the whole state is still working through.
Yeah. So we just have to see. Following up on a brief discussion in our March program, it was reported in the early part of this year that the Medicaid payments in Delta County were up significantly over 2013. Has this trend continued? And if so, does it indicate some serious situation?
Well, I think it does indicate a serious situation.
And what is that thing?
We're a poor county.
I'm sure it's a big strain on the budget of the county.
Well, and most of that is not so much a strain on the county budget. You know, those are federal dollars that are coming into the county, and we're somewhat more reliant on the feds than we really want to be. But as far as Medicaid dollars, yeah, in February it hit an all-time high of $1.7 million.
Right.
And, you know, who'd ever thought that we'd be in that type of a situation? But between the Affordable Care Act and people finding out that they are eligible for Medicaid and aging populations and everything else, I mean, that's become the norm now. And there's not a real quick turnaround answer for that one either.
So how do you budget for what you have to devote to Medicaid? As far as the county budget goes, it must be a...
Well, basically the only thing that we have to budget for is technicians and the workers that handle the people. Like I said, Medicaid is a federal money that comes in. So, and most of Health and Human Services is either funded by federal money or it's an 80-20 split between state and county. So, but the only thing we're really responsible for is more or less the technicians to handle all of it.
Oh, I see.
Which continues to take more and more.
Is there, from the state or the feds, is there a cap for the county amount, or will they pay you, will they reimburse you for everything that you have to pay out?
Well, for the county part of it, you know, there's, if you do all the paperwork right, it's there. But if you talk to health providers, like the hospital, when it comes to Medicaid, they get paid about 35 cents on the dollar. So it's a losing proposition for them. And that is a problem.
There have been many dire predictions and stuff in the press and so on that there's going to be a wholesale revolt on the part of the medical profession against Obamacare and physicians refusing to take Medicare patients and so on. Has there been any significant reaction of that type in our county to your knowledge?
Not to the extent of a whole-scale revolt. I mean, the biggest problem we have in this county, I think, is the number of physicians that are saying they can't take Medicare or Medicaid and trying to just find enough medical providers that will is kind of the situation we're facing in this county because of all the reimbursement problems and the extra work that it takes to document everything.
The paperwork must be horrendous.
Oh, it's horrendous. I mean, just for example, you know, our Health and Human Services Department, under the Affordable Care Act, if you go in to find out whether you're eligible or not, to get on the other statewide plan, you have to be turned down by Medicaid. But that's a 29-page form, I think they told me.
29 pages.
29 pages, what they told me.
Oh, my God.
Just to find out you're turned down, so then you're eligible for the other.
Unbelievable.
So it's a, I don't know whether you want to say it's a bureaucrat's dream or a nightmare.
Well, the guy that, at least the guy that designed the 29-page form made out all right. He probably got paid for that. And if he got paid by the page, he was doing okay.
Yeah.
It's incredible. How, we just have a minute left. How is the county doing fiscally, budget versus actuals for the current year?
Well, we're holding steady. We actually planned our sales tax revenue at pretty much a zero growth, and that's about where we're at. Our sales tax is down, just showing basically no growth, but we budgeted appropriately. So, you know, we're holding our own.
I only mention that because we're so conscious of the number of people been let off from the mines and so on. And, and of course, each one of those families have to presumably cut back on purchases, particularly discretionary purchases, and that reflects immediately on the sales tax revenue and so on.
Right. And I still feel like we may be in the initial phases of seeing the true hurt from that.
So it could get worse.
I predict it will.
Yeah.
I think, a lot of those people were still under severance pay. And when that runs out, I think we're going to see.
Yeah. Well, Mark, we unfortunately, our time is up here. We could talk a lot more about other things, but appreciate your coming up here for this.
Always a pleasure
program.
To come up, and time flies. When we're
it really does. We've been talking here on our monthly Delta County Commissioner's Report with Mr. Mark Rober, the 3rd District Commissioner, and be sure to tune in during the first week of each month for another edition of the Delta County Commissioner's Report. And for KVNF, I'm Felix Belmont.